I'm happy to welcome you here all again. Thank you for coming, and especially thank you to all these people that have, you know, taken time out of their Sunday, flown from various parts of the world and various parts of Japan, or, you know, if you've just wandered in from Ebisu, you're also very welcome. So let's get going, shall we? I have a lot to get through. I don't want to blow your mind, but also remember that I have these slides if anyone wants them. And I'm not a woman of mystery. I'm happy to share any of my information. So why aren't we moving? Here we go. Here we go. So what are we going to talk about today? I want to talk about the basic minpaku. I'm going to have a little review of the things that I covered in a couple of the last sessions. So I'm going to blow your mind with all of the tools that are out there for minpaku. A lot of people think that Airbnb is Airbnb is Airbnb. It's all pretty much the same. I'm here to dispel that myth and to show you how deep the software and tools are available for this particular asset class, but also not to frighten you, but to tell you the best practices on how to use them. And so I want to cover the online travel agencies, direct booking software, task management, marketing tools, and then I want to do a bit of a introduction to the really, really deep data that's available for dynamic pricing and also market dashboards. So that's if you're investigating where to get into, you know, where's the best place to invest, what pricing to do, all of that thing. I will do an overview of this, but then I'm going to get more into it, get really granular on the dynamic pricing and the market dashboards in the breakout session, which I'll do after this. Because again, not everyone's a nerd about this like I am. So let's move on. So who am I and why should you listen to me? So I'm a long-term resident of Tokyo. I've actually been here 24 years. This is an old slide. I've been vice president of a software company. It's a family business. We do language learning software on mobile phones. And I've been doing that for 30 years now. We originally, I don't know if you've been here as long as me, you may have heard of the original flip phone and iMode. I was one of the first software developers that launched products on there. I've also been CEO of Tokyo Family Stays. I've got into minpaku 13 years ago, and also of Tracy Northcott Consulting. This is where I help people make more money in their short-term rental business. My specialty is hospitality, and I'm also really into branding, really into marketing. I've also written a best-selling book. It's available on Amazon. And in a past life, I was a bar babe and in Golden Guy. The bar is still going. We sold it. You know, I don't know if you saw my son that was walking around here before. You know, he's now 14. So having a baby and running a bar, not a good mix. But in a past life, and I think I blew Blanca's mind recently, that I was actually a clinical chemist, biochemist, and I used to work in laboratories. I used to blow myself up a lot. I'm a very bad scientist, so I decided, nope, I need to go into something where I can't kill myself or other people. So then I moved into software, and then I became a slum... I mean, a minpaku host, not slumlord. I do a lot of things. I'm also very neurospicy, and that's part of my charm. So to know me is to love me. So what about Tokyo Family Stays? That's my handsome husband who has just run away. I mean, really. I'm speaking and he's run away. But he did run all of the lunch, so I'm very grateful for that. I started off with a single unit in 2011, so that was when my child was still a baby. We were getting too many visitors, and so we couldn't host them in our small Tokyo apartment anymore. So I rented a second apartment saying, ooh, family and friends, please come stay. And then I thought I'd rent it out and just break even. That was my goal. So, but the business grew and grew and grew. And it became a seven-figure US is what I'm talking about. And that was by 2015. So we have a fairly big business. We're still a family operation. All of my staff, I do feel like they are my family. We've been through all of the fun and games of Japanese licensing, so we have all the licenses needed. So we are a minpaku kandi. We have a many ryokan, gyos, like the licenses, and also the minpaku licenses. I've lost count how many guests we've had, but we also are very, very dedicated to building very strong community ties with local small businesses and non-profits. I really believe that minpaku is very much a local community exercise, and the more successful you'll be is how well you can integrate into your local community and provide that touch point to your guests. We also, you know, have a very strong CSR component. So we provide emergency houses. Sadly, we do have a number of people who need our services when they're escaping from DV, and which is an issue. And I want to make sure people are aware of that. And it should not be hidden. But I help a lot of families who are escaping. Also, we contribute to non-profits. And we donate a lot of our towels and things that can't be used for commercial anymore. We donate those to at-risk people, the unhoused. So that's me. I'm very woke, if you hadn't guessed. So in the past, we've had four summits, like I mentioned, and these are the past things that I've spoken about. I don't want to repeat myself. I get bored. And also, if you've been to a couple, I don't want to repeat the same information you've heard before. But they're all available online for free. So again, I'm not a woman of mystery. I'm happy to share all of my information for free, and it's up there on Ziv's website. So what I've covered in the past, and this is not going to be covered in this talk, so if you do want to know about these particular items, go back and look at some of those past talks. I've talked about the history, how the Airbnb was a disruptor in globally as well as locally. Also in Japan, the life before licensing versus life after licensing, and then the absolute horror that was 2020. And it's all right, I had therapy, it's all good. Haven't become an alcoholic, but it was pretty grim. I lost $1 million in 3 weeks. booked bookings in the can, $1 million in 3 weeks. I sat on my living room floor holding a bottle of vodka, numb. I had no idea what was happening. So PTSD, not fun. But I've also spoken in the past about licensing categories, the difference between a ryokan and a minpaku, and then strategies and case studies on and I've done a number of conversions with my good friend Veronica, who's sitting here, who's helped me many times travel from the minpaku license through to the ryokan license. And I've also spoken briefly about the yield. Now, this is not my expertise. I'm not really great on spreadsheets, but I'm learning. And so I have actually done a lot of calculations with, again, my good friend Ziv, on the different yields between a short-term rental investment and a long-term. Again, all of those spreadsheets are up for use. And I've also spoken briefly about the dashboards with Price Labs. And then marketing. This is my wheelhouse. I love this stuff. So I get really nerdy about understanding hospitality and, you know, really dialing into your ideal guest. What is your why? Because I think that is key. Even though it's marketing 101 for every brand and every business, I think there's some particular nuances for running a short-term rental business, and I love it. I love it. So if you've got any questions about that, I'm your girl. So I did want to keep this one slide. I've had this in every one so far. As I said, I'm a dictionary nerd. I make dictionaries. This is screenshots from some of my dictionaries, just to give you just a bit of background so we're on the same page about the word minpaku and what it means in Japan and where it comes from. So it comes from minshuku and shukhaku combined to become minpaku. But it only really entered the Japanese lexicon in 2003. So it's a fairly new word, and it has a lot of layers of complexity and culture, but not going to get into that today. I think a lot of you have already signed up for the freebies, the handouts. If you have not, please scan this code and you'll get a whole bunch of freebies that you would have been emailed about it. But if you haven't seen it, download it. There's a little short questionnaire-y bit and then you can get all the freebies and all our good stuff. Okay, let's move on. Oh, sorry, was too fast? Okay, there are QR codes around the place. I'm just going to run through quickly what the different types of business models there are. Really, short-term rentals are in an asset class all of their own. We're in a real estate summit. I'm not a real estate investor, so I'm a bit of an interloper. So I really feel that real estate is my place of business. So I'm sort of real estate adjacent. So there's a couple of classes. There's a couple of different ways you can run. There's owner-operators, property management, co-hosting, rental arbitrage, midterm rentals. I do all of those, right? And then, of course, there's a whole bunch of peripherals in and around the industry, which is upselling and cross-selling. So I'm talking about tour guides, and I'm talking about like transport companies, personal chefs, babysitters, all of those things that potentially your guest is going to be spending money on anyway, that is also part of the ecosystem, and collaboration with third-party vendors. So just briefly, owner-operators. The example of this is a house hack. Now, I'm a house hacker myself. When I built my house here in Tokyo, I specifically built it with a separate apartment on the ground floor. It has a separate entrance, and it's a nisetai jutaku, basically, for the banks, what the bank sees. So, but that means I have an income stream through my house. Or the other option is you can rent a couch, you can put a tent in your backyard. There's a lot of ways that you can be an owner-operator in the short-term rental. You can have a second house, say at the beach, in the mountains, at the ski resorts. And when you're an owner-operator, you can control all aspects of the business and you can work as much or as little as you want and you get to keep 100% of the profits. So depending on how clever you are in management. Then there's another class called property management. So this is short-term property management, but which is different from, obviously, a regular property manager on a long-term rental. So in Japan, you do need a license, at Minpaku Kandi. And I went through all the licenses in the last session, so I'm not going to get into the weeds in that here. A good property manager will also be involved in revenue management, in guest acquisition and guest experience. So looking after, making sure all of your guests are happy and healthy, and also top of funnel, so making sure that you're attracting the right guests. Usually on a property management, you'll pay a commission to the owner on the top line revenue, usually a percentage of gross. There's no one right way to do it. It's really who are the parties involved and what are the terms that everyone is in agreement with. Usually the owner will pay all the utilities and setup, and often it's a remote management, hands off. So that's if the owner is remote. The owner can like hand it over to a property manager, and that can be a passive situation. For the property manager, i.e. me, it's not passive. So for the owner, passive, for the non-owner, passive. This is a slightly different nuance. This is co-hosting. Again, you need to have a licensed property manager, but you would do a profit share with the owner and the property manager. Often this happens when as a remote owner. So there's an owner who lives abroad. They want to come and use their house 2 to 3 times a year, and it's like a co-hosting situation. So it's more of a, working together, more of a collaborative process. And you can also do part-time. So again, this is great with 180 days. If you're limited to 180 days, owner uses it for 180 days, everybody is happy. And then this is it's a funny word, rental arbitrage. It's also in the UK called the rent-to-rent or subletting. I do a lot of this, mainly because I like to control everything and I don't like to answer to anybody. This is where there is a commercial lease directly with the owner of the building. I'm paying a monthly rent. I pay it no matter how much I make. So there is a high setup fees. So I've got to pay for all the furniture. I've got to pay for all the licensing. I've got to pay for everything. So it's like a, you know, like a chintai, but a commercial chintai. So the profit obviously is the difference between the costs, which is all the utilities and everything as well, and the earnings. But the delta that is possible if you're doing it right makes it very attractive. So it's a high risk but high return. But you don't need to own the property, which in Japan, if there's not really much capital growth that you expect, then this is a really good option. Again, real estate is my place of business, not my actual business. And then there is the midterm. So these are digital nomads. So this is usually not as high return because monthly rentals, serviced apartments, you don't charge the same high daily rate that you would for a vacation rental. But typically your customer base is a digital nomad, professors on summer sabbaticals, relocations. Hello, Nick. I'll talk to you later. Contract workers. You don't need to have a Minpaku license, but you may have some bylaws of the kumiai that you need to respect. Typically lower monthly income, but it's much less work. Much less work. But the challenge is, when you don't have the license, the challenge is the top of funnel. How do you find your guests? How are you marketing to them? If you're not allowed to market on Airbnb or any of the OTAs, how are you finding them? So that's a different challenge altogether for another session. So again, challenge is finding the right guests, and that having a hybrid strategy for marketing works very well with 180 days vacation rental, short-term rental, and then 180 days of mid-term rentals. So that's basically what I do to make sure that I'm maximising the yield on my properties that I have to pay rent on anyway. So, next one. Now I'm going to get into some tech stack. Now, I don't want to blow your mind. You don't have to remember all of these things. I mainly wanted to show you the sheer number of tools that are available. But at the end, really, every business is different. So when you look at all of these things, don't think there is one right way to do it. There is the way that makes sense for you and your business. So automation. The main purpose of technology, I've got little automations in there, is to get booked, get paid, stay organised. That's the main purpose of technology, right? And we are the humans. We don't let the machines run our life. But start where you are and you look at your business and go, well, what can I automate? What can I automate now that is going to reduce my daily workload? It's going to make my life easier and give me more time to sit on the beach. But you need systems and processes to avoid burnout, especially if you're running at scale and if you've got 15 check-ins per day. You cannot do this by yourself. So here are the main players. Oh, look again. I didn't realise I had this automation set up. Obviously, the easiest low-hanging fruit for running is the online travel agencies, right? This is Airbnb, VRBO, Booking.com. And this is usually where the amateurs stop. And that's fine. It leaves the market wide open for me to keep going. But, you know, Airbnb, I have a love-hate, bittersweet relationship with Airbnb. Buy me a drink and I'll get started on it. But they make it really easy. They really are the gateway drug to short-term rentals. It's very, very easy. You start making money instantly. They tell you that they're taking care of all your insurance and bloody blah. But they make it easy to get going. In Japan, there's also a couple of other players, Rakuten Travel, who I'm having a bit of a battle with. Google Vacation Rentals, Expedia, again, these are global players. And then you get really into sort of niche online travel agents. There's a ton of them, and I've just picked a couple here. Sabbatical Homes. These are specifically targeting university professors who are traveling. Marriott Homes and Villas, again, different market demographic, different set of customers. Mr. B&B, this is a specifically LGBTQ online travel agency, so that people, guests who are LGBTQ, know that they definitely have a safe space when they book using Mr. B&B, etc., etc. There is so many niches. Then we get into, I don't want to bamboozle you with all these terms. So property management system, PMS, I will say PMS a lot. CM, channel manager. The goal of this particular class of software is to connect to the online travel agency. It is to connect all of your stuff to all the different channels, make sure you don't get double booked. And it also will take care of a central spot where you can take care of guest communication, billing, marketing, all of these things, and also website hosting. So this comes into the get paid and get management category of the operations. This is only a small subsection of the choices. They all pretty much do the same, but you've just got to pick it. Like, they tell you they're going to do everything, but you just have some discernment about what the different companies will offer. I'm pretty agnostic. I'm not married to any, but even though I use Lodgify, I'm very fond of Guesty. I'm not married to any of them. They all have their pros and cons. But at the end of the day, you're the host. You run the show. There's also a whole bunch of direct booking tools. So this is if you want to control all aspects of your business and run a direct booking engine. I love my direct booking engine. I really got stuck into getting direct bookings when licensing came in and Airbnb threw everybody under the bus. So I stopped drinking the Kool-Aid on that day, and that was in 2016, and I haven't looked back. I still see Airbnb as one of my marketing partners, but I do not see myself as an Airbnb host. But what you do need to do is you have to be very careful about your branding. It's a marketing job, right? So you need to know. You build a website, you also have to get people to get there. So all the standard tools that you would use, search engine optimization. You also need to manage your own insurance policies and also the guest vetting to make sure that you don't have like 15 backpackers destroy your property. It's happened, trust me. And then marketing strategy. So again, we're getting really into regular marketing here, which all these rules apply to this asset class being short-term rentals. So all the same rules of marketing that you know will also apply where you are. And these are all the tools that you can use. So there's a ton of them, so many of them. There's also task management and automation. And again, there's a heap. So this is communication within your team. This is operations management. So a lot of these are crossovers from the hotel. Like, hotels are very, very mature in terms of their operations software. So a lot of these have been adapted for specifically the short-term rental. So this is back-of-house operations, front-of-house operations, maintenance tracking, billing. And then you get into sort of the guest management, automated messaging, the verification, making sure people are who they say they are, because it's the internet, you don't know who you're getting, digital guidebooks, being able to upsell, and then things like remote monitoring. This is a fairly new class of software, which is fabulous. I have a problem with one of my properties in that the restaurant below is very noisy after hours. I have a monitor that tells me when noise has got over a certain level, and I can immediately contact that restaurant and say, hey, shut the F up. Our guests are trying to sleep. Before the guest has registered that I can't sleep, I'm going to give you a bad review because it's noisy, my monitor tells me that I can go and call the police on these rat bags. So, oh my God, hey Veronica, rat bags. And then there's also all the other things like automated locks. And if you do want to be completely hands-off and completely remote, you can just be doing like self-check-ins. I'm not that type of host, but there's nothing wrong if you are. If you want to do self-check-ins and actually if you don't like people and don't want to see them, that's fine. You don't have to see your guests. I love people. And I love finding a new, fresh audience. So I love being able to meet everybody and all my staff meets everybody. And there's a lot of reasons for that. That, again, blow your mind. These are the best in class. And there's a whole bunch more. So you don't really need to remember all this. I just wanted to show you the sheer breadth of the technology available to you if you go down this path. So much. But I've just got a caveat here. Beware of shiny objects. The AI people tell you, we're going to do everything for you. You can go and sit on the beach and it's going to run your business passively. Nah, no way. You know your guests. You know your business better than anyone. You need to choose from that big list before the solutions that are best for you. Some tools don't play nice together. And many AI bots really do feel generic and they don't feel very welcoming and they're not representing your brand and not representing you the best way. So you're in control. You need to run the computers. Don't let the computers run you. Machines are simply tools. So have I hammered this in enough? So I just want you to remember to be the boss of you. Start slowly. Look at what tasks you can automate. And start slowly and do the next right thing. Nobody knows your business as well as you do. Right, now I'm going to get into for the last 10 minutes. Come on, hello. Why aren't you going now? Right, dynamic pricing and portfolio analysis. So this is for the real like investment nerds. You want to know how much you're going to earn. You want to know how much you're going to get. I use a dynamic pricing system. I used to do it on my own, thinking that I knew my customers and I knew my market and everything, and I looked at all the competition by hand and I thought, oh yeah, I'm making all the money. But as soon as you get one or two bookings that are in Hanami that are regular pricing, you go, oh crap, I'm like, you've got to keep up with the calendar. Dynamic pricing will do it for you. It will alert you when there's like Taylor Swift comes to town. You don't need to be watching when Taylor Swift comes to town. It will tell you and then it will automatically upgrade your prices to capture that. This is to stop you leaving money on the table. This is also to look at pacing. And like honestly, this is a real... the dynamic pricing, the scraping of the data and the way that they crunch the numbers has just... I've really been on a journey the last 12 months and it's been great. So this is Price Labs, and yes, Price Labs has sponsored me and has given you like notebooks and everything. So so just to be completely transparent, there are other dynamic pricing people. I did use another one before. I'm now using this one, and there are other companies. Pick the one that resonates with you. So the data sources, it grabs the data. It will process, it'll remove blocks, it'll do all the things that are logical that you can't do in your, you know, human brain. It will also look at all the local performance. It will also, you get to choose things like what you think the floor and the ceiling should be, and then it'll adjust within that in that section. It will sync, so it will talk straight to the property management system, so the PMS, and that then automatically zaps into to Airbnb, etc. And it will automatically set the prices every day. It will change them, a bit like what the airlines do. And then the performance. Once a month, I go in, I look at my KPIs, and I see how am I pacing, how am I tracking, how am I going. So again, this is how the prices are generated. It looks at seasonality, it looks at demand, it looks at future bookings, it scrapes in all the data from the hotel bookings, hotels, VRBO, Airbnb, all of them. It scrapes it all in, and then it does its magic, and don't ask me how, but it does. I'm a software developer. I don't even know how this works. So, and then it will give you help along the way. Again, there are a couple of other companies who do this. I'm just using the Price Labs. This is fantastic. This is, you know, if you're a data nerd, this is great. It will compare year on year. It will compare overperforming, underperforming, and it will let you, like, use your human brain to then make choices on what options it gives you. I'm just going to keep skipping through because I'm going to really dive deep into that, into the breakout session. But I just wanted to show you this. The red line is 2024 compared. This is the difference that it makes, guys. Look at the difference. I mean, yes, demand has been up, but it's put the prices up to prices that I didn't think I was able to capture. Because it's like, you know, as a small business owner, you go, oh, I don't want to price myself out of the market. I'm a bit scared. It takes all of that fear away and it puts the price in. And then if you don't get bookings, it'll adjust. It'll, like, based on a set of rules. If you've got holes in your calendar, it will fill up those holes based on pricing. But you're capturing all of that excess revenue. And year on year, I'm 136% over year on year. Just, like, kills me. And it's the same properties, the same marketing. It's just that it's controlling the prices. But it gives me all of this stuff, which is really interesting. If you're just getting in, there is also some tools that will allow you to figure out which area am I going to invest in. So when you're operating, that's one thing, but then when you're getting into the game, this will also, you know, is this particular area worth getting into? You can do a quick and dirty estimate based on the address and the size of the property, and you can get, again, quick and dirty. Is this worth my time? Is this property worth me buying? So that's a different product to the dynamic pricing. So this is the market dashboard before you get in. And there's a whole segment. Then that's the quick and dirty one. There is also the full market dashboard. If you signed up for the freebies, I've put some of those in there, and the PDFs that I've already created, you can download those and have a play with them. They're based on YoYogi 5, which is where I live. You can look at what data is available to you. I don't really want to get too much into the weeds. But the best thing is that you can create subsets using filters based on the address of the property. So you can go how many, like the radius. You can also say, do I want premium places or do I want budget places? And you can look at a really granular level using those comparison sets. Instantly, you can look at the views from the real-time data, because this is real data. These are real bookings that have happened. And then you can tweak the policies and rules to capture that maximum revenue. And you can spy on the competition or just, like, look at what's around in your area just to see how you're pacing as well. So stop leaving money on the table. 5 minutes to go. Q&A, yes. Again, I'm going to get into this one upstairs. This is just, again, from that market dashboard. It tells you in the last 365 days, the estimated revenue of whole of YoYogi is 6 million yen. That's on every single size. That's from a studio through to a 10-bedroom. So if you want to narrow that down, you can look at the filters on the side, and it will tell you what, again, those KPIs. What are the metrics? What is the average daily rate? And again, these are all the, like, again, if you're, this is all on that handout. You can look at the YoYogi 5 and see what people are making, the average occupancy, and then you can compare it with your property to see how you're going. What's really interesting is you can see that a lot of people sometimes charge cleaning fees. Sometimes they don't. They look at you can see what type of the cancellation policies the other people have. And this one's interesting, this extra person fee as well. A lot of people charge a flat rate for the house. If you've got a larger property, my free tip to you today is have a limit, 4 people, and then per person charge per night after that. And you will earn a ton of extra money. I look at this graph and see, oh my God, all these people, all these hosts are like leaving so much money on the table. But that's okay, I'll take it. That's fine. So this is an introduction code to Price Labs. Again, full disclosure, they sponsor me. This is for the revenue management tool. If you click on that link, you will get a 30-day free trial if you have a property already. If you don't, you can buy the market dashboards and you can buy the revenue estimates. But if you have a property, even if you have any Airbnb listing, you can get 2 free tokens and a free market dashboard for free. Otherwise, I think it's $20, like $19.99. That's between you and Price Labs, not with me. But if you need a full dashboard analysis, come talk to me and come to the breakout session. And final slide. It's a very mature asset class, and I think I can show you that there's so many peripheral software companies that have invested and have created apps and solutions to support short-term rental hosts. There's a lot of big data tools out there, so that shows you that this is not just like, you know, like a humble Airbnb down the road. This is a full-on profitable business. It supports me and my family. I'm very grateful. And there's larger players coming in, but these big data tools allow small operators to also have the benefit of these of a big company. Usually, I don't know what there's a missing thing on that slide, so just ignore the rest of it. But just to know that there is that it's not passive income, but the squeeze is certainly worth the juice. So that's me. If you want to talk to me, scan that. That should work. You can book in for a free session with me. I can talk, like, come to me with some burning questions. So know what you want. Like, know what you really want to ask me, and I'm there to help you. If you have property in Tokyo that is I don't do licensing. Let me just say, I don't licensing, but if you are prepared to go through the pain of getting a license, I'm prepared to make you money on that. So come talk to me about that with Tokyo Family Stays. And that's probably it. Q&A. Yes. I'll put it back. So if you still want to scan it. Oh, there we go. Any questions from the stream? Oh, any questions from the stream? Hello. Microphone for those for those playing at home. They need to hear it.
Yes. I wanted to ask, does any property in Tokyo can turn into a short-term, mid-term, long-term?
No.
What would be the
Let me direct you to my previous. It all comes down to zoning, whether you can license it. You cannot list on Airbnb without a license, 100%. Can't even get on. So you need a license, and it's a commitment. It's like I said, it's not passive, it's a commitment, but the squeeze is worth the juice. Is there any questions from players at home?
Yeah, we had a two-part question.
Okay.
About
It is a two-part question. So for rental arbitrage, do you need a Minpaku Ryokan license? Is the first part of the question.
Yes.
Yes, you do. Okay.
It's the same whether you own or rent or whatever, you cannot do Minpaku business in Japan without a license.
Got it. Part two of the question would be, and are there many landlords open to subletting or using their property for this type of business?
No. They are like hen's teeth. I have a real estate agent who is full-time looking for properties for me. Whenever she finds them, she gives me a call and says, I have this property. They are Minpaku. I've been called twice in 3 years. So she's asking every single person that she comes across in her world who is open to doing Minpaku is very, very, very few. And I have to show my mission statement, vision statement. I have to, like, give a blood test, my firstborn child, you know, promise my firstborn child. I have to show that I'm a reputable host and that I'm not going... Because Minpaku has, for a lot of reasons, has an interesting reputation. Even though if you're doing it right, if you're doing it professionally, you are bringing benefit to the community. But in the minds of a lot of people, it's like, well, I don't want an Airbnb as my next door neighbour. I don't want Yahoos. And that's because there's a lot of hosts doing it badly. So I agree. If you've got a bad host next to you, my sympathies. It's, you know, because there are a lot of people who are terrible at it. But if you're good at it, you'll make a lot of money. Hello. Yes. Just for those players at home.
Yeah, no worries. So you mentioned zoning. It depends on whether you can do 180 days. Now,
correct.
In our particular area we're looking at, there's actually a 120-day limit.
Yep, correct.
Would you advise pursuing 120-day limitations on Minpaku?
It depends. Depends what your personal business goals are. Have you contacted the ward office? And you've got... See, the ward office are very transparent. They will give you... Or the Hokkenjo will give you a checklist of what you have to do to get the license. It's very transparent. If you tick all those boxes, they'll give you a license. But it's like, it's a lot. It's a lot. And so you have to decide if the squeeze is worth the juice. Do you want to be running a hybrid situation where you do 120 days of short-term rental and then the other time of the year doing mid-term rentals? Or, you know, you have to decide what your business got. Is it worth it? I don't know. It's up to you.
One of the things we did notice when we went through the Kuyak show and investigated that was that it's 120 days, but weekends only. But again, yes. That seems to be a very grey area.
Are you in Meguro?
Very close. We're in Setagaya, Data. Mm-hmm. So what they did tell us was that, well, if you do it for a few weeks and everything's okay, then maybe we'll change it to any day of the week. So have you heard anything about that before?
Never. Veronica, yeah. Have you heard any ward office saying that, anything like that? Never heard that. Usually it's like, I mean, each ku is very strict. I mean, Otaku is not.
Right.
Osaka is not.
Yeah.
Meguro-ku is just like...
Insane.
Yeah, and Karuizawa is like, you know, they're insane. It really does, it's on a ward-by-ward basis.
Right. Yeah, I know the immediate area. There's very few.
And then within the ward, there are different, you know, depending on if you're on a main street or if you're Res A or you mix commercial or you're a short-time guy, it's all down to zoning. And if you want to know what those zonings are, they're on the free thing. Yeah, you have the map.
Yeah.
I've just been called time. So, time.